so hang in there. I'm going to ask Kat if she'd like to come and read the passage to us that we're looking at this morning, remembering that the fact that we are part of God's family, demonstrating His love. And
this is 1 Timothy 5:3-16. Give proper recognition to those widows who are really in need. But if a widow has children or grandchildren, these should learn first of all to put their religion into practice by caring for their own family, and so repaying their parents and grandparents, for this is pleasing to God. The widow who is really in need and left all alone puts her hope in God and continues night and day to pray and to ask God for help. But the widow who lives for pleasure is dead even while she lives. Give the people these instructions so that no one may be open to blame. Anyone who does not provide for their relatives, and especially for their own household, has denied the faith and is worse than an unbeliever. No widow may be put on the list of widows unless she is over 60, has been faithful to her husband, and is well known for her good deeds, such as bringing up children, showing hospitality, washing the feet of the Lord's people, helping those in trouble, and devoting herself to all kinds of good deeds. As for younger widows, do not put them on such a list, for their sensual desires overcome their dedication to Christ. They may want to marry. Thus they bring judgment on themselves because they have broken their first pledge. Besides, they get into the habit of being idle and going about the house from house to house, and not only do they become idlers, but also busybodies who talk nonsense, saying things they ought not to. So I counsel younger widows to marry, to have children, to manage their homes, and to give the enemy no opportunity for slander. Some have, in fact, already turned away to follow Satan. If any woman who is a believer has widows in her care, she should continue to help them and not let the church be burdened with them, so that the church can help those whose widows are really in need. And then 1 Timothy 6, 1 and 2. All who are under the yoke of slavery should consider their masters worthy of full respect, so that God's name and our teaching may not be slandered. Those who have believing masters should not show them disrespect just because they follow their fellow believers. Instead, they should serve them even better because their masters are dear to them as fellow believers and devoted to the welfare of their slaves. These are the things you should teach and insist on.
Thanks, Kat. It's quite clear, really, isn't it, what we've got to do? Don't go gossiping and talk. We're looking, really, at a bit more of an extended family now, aren't we? We're getting sort of bigger. There's a big section in here about widows, and you might be thinking, why does he go on about widows so much? But, do you know, it's really in God's heart, that passage that, that Cheryl read earlier, back in Zechariah, it actually says he's a God who looks after the fatherless and the widows. And if you look back to the Old Testament and the scriptures there, there's so many, many words about looking after people who are perhaps excluded. Because, why? Because there's no NHS, there's no social services, there's no pension system, but it's because they're left out, they've got no means of support. So in the Jewish community, there were rules and regulations that God gave them about including widows, looking after them, looking after the children who were fatherless, and it's God's heart to be inclusive. So I think this is carried on into this new community that Paul is talking to here in Ephesus. He's actually saying, this is the same, we have to look after widows. And if we go back to the Acts of the Apostles, we see that the early church had, well, I'm not saying they had problems, but they were actually giving out, they've been hospitable, they're giving out lots of probably funding, food, etc. to widows. And they got a little bit overwhelmed. You can imagine if there's any free stuff going, you know, you'll get probably queues of people, won't you? And they got quite overwhelmed, and they had to actually appoint 7 deacons to look after that, so that Peter and the rest of them could actually concentrate on scriptures. So it's similar to what Paul is saying here, isn't it? We need to give time to teaching and preaching, but we need to as well look after all of those who could be excluded. So that's where Paul is coming from. We've actually got lots of examples of widows in the Old Testament and in the New Testament who were God-fearing. Think about the woman that actually had a small jar of oil, that's all she had, and the prophet Elisha came along and said, what's the problem? And she sort of said, I'm a widow, my husband's died, I've got 2 children to look after, and the debtors are at the door knocking for my money. I can't give them any, I haven't got any. And he said, go and get some pots and pans, anything you've got, any containers, start filling up with that little bit of oil. And it went everywhere, went into containers that she had not enough. And she was able to feed her family and pay off her debts. God's care for her was immense. It actually kept her going for quite, well, what it said, it says actually, for as long as she needed, you know, forever, probably. And it's God's care was there for her. That's just one example. There's Ruth and Naomi, lots that we can find, how God came to the rescue and came to the aid of widows, of people that were excluded or didn't have a means of support. So Paul is saying in this passage, you've got to look after widows. You've got to look after this extended family, but we can see that there might be a few issues here, so he's quite clear to Timothy. He gives him some advice about how to organise the issue. So he said, first of all, families. If a widow is in a family, then it's the family's responsibility to look after them. That's quite straightforward, isn't it? And I think we can sort of apply that to ourselves, even though today our families are very scattered. They might be dispersed. We might be a bit like the happy families we had just earlier on. But there's something about trying to support each other which is inbuilt, should be inbuilt in us. And then Paul goes on to say, the older widows, they've got a place. I wondered why this was the passage I was given, because it says about, this must be the only place that women's age is mentioned, and it says women over 60. And I'm thinking, is that why I got this passage, really? Having just retired, you know, but here it is. It's quite clear that widows who are over 60 can be actually added onto the list that the church was running. It may be, we're not sure, but it may be that since the Acts, the early church, they might have put in a bit more structure. Perhaps they had some trustees and administrators who put a bit of framework around what they were doing. And they probably, some commentators say, that they may have had a list, a pledge, that widows had to sign up to. You can imagine, as I said earlier, that anybody could have been coming and saying, oh yeah, I like this church, I'm part of you lot, you know, sort of thing, and getting some handouts. But basically, you had to probably pledge to say that you were going to be devoted to God and serve him as your first pledge, be devoted to Jesus. And that's what they were looking for in widows. And it may have been that some of the younger widows had perhaps might have signed that, they might have done it, but then actually weren't devoted to Christ. They lost their first love, if you like, and they perhaps started sort of looking elsewhere. Now, in that culture of Ephesus, which we heard from Andy a while ago, about how it was a culture which was idol worshipping, and they actually worshipped the goddess Diana, which was the goddess of fertility. We know that women had a very prominent view, place in society there. Both probably, there may have been some exploitation of women, and there also probably was some exaltation of them as well in lots of different ways. And you can imagine these women could have been getting drawn back into that. And I think Paul was trying to say to Peter, Timothy, you must guard against that. So perhaps watch out for these younger women. If they want to get married, then fine. They can go and get a family and bring up the family, put their efforts into a family, rather than perhaps going around house to house, it says in one of the versions, sort of talking and slandering people, getting involved as busybodies. And there are some modern translations. I know that Heather told me that she read this in The Message and it was really helpful. So if you want to have to do that, go away and look at it somewhere else. It might help you understand that a bit better. So it looks as if there was some guidance that was given here that people could come along if they were widows. They first of all had to be looked after by their families if they had them. So the church wouldn't have to bear the responsibility of that. The younger widows, they could then go and get married if they wanted to, find their place in society that way. But older widows who probably couldn't do that, then their place was to be a support in the church and to be supported by the church. It was like a two-way thing. So the older widows, it says they should give themselves to prayer, to hospitality. They were involved in helping people. They were actually, it says somewhere that they washed other people's feet, which was like something that used to happen when you'd been on a long journey. If you went to someone's house, you'd wash their feet as part of the hospitality. So that sort of was probably people who were strangers or visitors. These women were great at being hospitable to them. And it seems as if they were really key part of the church. They were the ones that probably Paul was going to sign up onto the list, if you like. And actually, it was interesting. I didn't think that list was that difficult, different from some of the things in chapter 3 that Paul puts down for leaders of elders and deacons. It was a similar sort of thing. And we all know, don't we? We all know probably women that are really good prayer warriors. And now my mum, I think of as somebody like this. She was great back at home in Wales. She was somebody who'd be there and she'd be praying. And she was a real strength, both when my dad was alive and afterwards, to the local church. And she was somebody I'd say was like a prayer warrior. And those are the sort of people, I think, that Paul was talking about in this chapter. So all in all, I think what Paul was really concerned about was this new community would be demonstrating Jesus' love in ways that perhaps they haven't seen elsewhere. So the community around them couldn't sort of pick holes in them and say, actually, you're not looking after these people properly, or you're allowing people to sin and do this and do that. They couldn't pick holes in them. So I think Paul was really concerned that the name of Jesus, the name of Christ, the name of God would be carried through like it had been through the Old Testament as well. So I think that's where we've got to, really. We've got to the end. We've seen this morning how God's love is extended to us through the communion. We've felt his presence here this morning as we've worshipped together and as we've shared bread and wine together. And now his love can actually, as we go from this place today, can be shared to others, through us, through what we're doing, through the family that we're in, this church family. We can be included in an ISCA. One of the things I noticed on the ISCA website, this is what it says, is its first paragraph. It says, ISCA is a family of imperfect people, united by faith that Jesus has set us free to live fully in God's grace, forgiveness and goodness. We've all got our own stories, including the chapters of struggle, pain and disappointment, but we walk through it all together, growing in understanding of God's love and sharing it both inside and outside the church. So in other words, this love, this inclusion we've got, we need to take it to our edges. We need to take it with us to the people we're meeting around in the week as well, whatever, that we're inclusive. So I think for us today, the challenge is, are we included in what we're doing here? Are we included? Do we feel included? Are we part of perhaps discipleship groups? Are we part of our missional communities? Are we part of other teams? How are we included? How do we feel included? And the other aspect of that, the other flip side, is do we include others? How do we include others? Are we doing that? Are we reaching out to people? Are we noticing what's going on for people that we're with? So I think that's the takeaway message from that bit. We talked about widows, but this is an extension of our family, so that we can share the love of Jesus. Kath also read the verses in chapter 6 about slaves, and I did think initially why they tagged on there as well. But of course, slaves in those days would have been part of families. They would have lived in the same house. They would have been part of the family. And Paul was saying to those people as well, if you're employed, if you're in employment, then respect your masters, and that shows the love of Jesus. If you're an employee, follow that rule. If you're an employer or you're a master, then respect the people that you employ. And actually, you know, you will be showing the love of Jesus that way as well. So all in all, that's, I think, sums up being part of God's family. I think we showed earlier on that it can be messy, it can be different, it can be difficult, but actually we are in this together, and God has got us in his care and in his love. Okay, thank you.